Well, good evening. This is Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer with another session of Medical Frontiers. We missed last week because of the holiday. We're back full guns tonight. So we're going to be talking about pulmonary hypertension, and we're very fortunate to have as our guest this evening Dr. Cassis George. We're going to call her Dr. George for simplicity. And I promise I'm not going to let any secrets on the air tonight. She was on the air 20 months ago. And before the show, she told me that she was pregnant. She didn't say anything about me not saying that she was pregnant, so I announced it on the air. Well, certainly her husband knew, but not all of her coworkers and friends knew. So I'm here to tell you tonight that our guest is not pregnant, according to her, Dr. George. And it's so much fun having you back on Medical Frontiers. You decided to come back, right?
I did. It's okay. So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And you're a cardiologist, and... You know, during the tease, Rob Pratt was asking me, you know, what is pulmonary hypertension? Well, you hear blood pressure, high blood pressure, and so on. Explain to the audience what we mean by pulmonary hypertension.
So your lungs have blood vessels. Pulmonary hypertension is a vascular disease in the blood vessels of the lung. And the reason why we care about that is because the right side of the heart pumps blood into the lungs to become oxygenated. So that's where your blood picks up oxygen.
That's the bad blood going into the heart to become good blood.
Correct.
And be pumped out in the arteries.
Yes. And then the good blood goes to the left side of the heart, and the left side pumps that blood to all your vital organs. So whenever you hear of heart disease, classically people think about the left side of the heart and tend to forget about the right side. And for a long time, even physicians forgot about that right side of the heart. They thought, hey, that right side is a passive conduit. So, you know, our blood just dumps in and dumps out. But now we know you need the right side of the heart to live. And so we care about when the right side has to work overtime. And that's why we care about pulmonary hypertension.
Okay. And what are some of the causes of that right side working overtime and causing pulmonary hypertension? What are the causes?
Sure. So I'm glad you asked that, because pulmonary hypertension, so probably 80 to 90% of the time, pulmonary hypertension is caused by other diseases. Primarily, when the left side of the heart is sick, what happens is the pressures in the blood back up into the lungs and then raise the pressure in the lungs. So if somebody has pulmonary hypertension, there's an 80 to 90% chance it's actually coming from the left side of the heart. And then 10 to 15% of the time, it's coming from disease that's actually happening in the lungs. So if somebody's been a smoker and has terrible emphysema or COPD, or if somebody has pulmonary fibrosis or some other disease in the lung that's affecting the vessels, that's where it's coming from. And only 5% of the time, so very rarely, is it a disease intrinsic or like native to the actual vessels of the lung. That's a very rare disease state when it's because of that.
Well, if we put a sphygmomanometer in for those other orthopedic surgeons out there in the office, in the audience, that's a blood pressure cuff. And does it register on a blood pressure cuff or no?
No, it doesn't actually.
So regular hypertension does.
Okay. Right.
So now, whenever I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago to have back surgery, before I even went into surgery, they put boots on me. Okay. Tell us why those are necessary when you're in a hospital, that type of thing. What does that prevent?
Right. So those boots, if you will, are their cuffs. They inflate intermittently. And what that does is it helps keep the blood flowing in the veins, which can be stagnant blood. So it keeps the blood flowing to prevent blood clots.
From the veins in your leg, especially in the back of your leg, okay? And that's called thromboembolic disease whenever you develop clots.
So, if you develop blood clots in your legs, that's not a good thing for various reasons. But one of the reasons why is because there's a chance that those blood clots can travel to the lungs.
Okay.
And you do not want that. That's what's called a pulmonary embolism.
Okay. So there's a blood clot that forms in the back of your leg, travels up your leg into what we call the inferior vena cava, which is the big, big vein in the abdomen. And then that goes to the lung so that that bad blood, the blue blood, can be oxygenated. And so if you form a clot, and especially what was called a saddle embolism that occurs right at the junction where the right and left of veins bifurcate and come down into the legs and so on, that can be instant death.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
People can have a cardiac arrest from that. And it's because the right side of the heart just poops out acutely, like very quickly poops out.
Yeah. And some people form little clots in their veins that go to the far reaches of the lungs, out in the periphery of the lung, and causing damage, even though they're very, very tiny clots. And that can be a cause of pulmonary hypertension.
Absolutely. It's if you imagine this, if I heard this analogy given and I loved it. If you get a spoonful of jelly and throw it into...
Grape jelly?
Strawberry jelly.
Okay, strawberry jelly, okay.
Put it into the pulmonary artery. That's an acute clot. So a clot comes directly. Now imagine the jelly getting squished to the sides of the wall of the vessel and just caking into the walls,
okay,
making the wall thick. That's what we call chronic thromboembolic pulmonary disease.
Okay.
And because it causes such remodeling in the vessels, what happens is the blood pressure goes up, or the pressure in the lungs goes up.
And that's a slower process than a big clot going and causing a massive embolism in the lung that may bother somebody's breathing and possibly kill them.
Right. And in fact, so 5% of all people who have developed a blood clot in the lung can go on to develop chronic thromboembolic disease. So for whatever reason, their body never consumed the clot or got rid of the clot.
Yeah. Yeah. How common is that, doctor?
So of all the people who have ever had pulmonary embolisms, 5% of them can develop chronic thromboembolic disease.
Okay. Well, it's a very interesting process, and it's kind of interesting that it has taken the medical community a while to realize how important that right side of the heart is and this whole thing regarding pulmonary hypertension. And I know that at AHN, we actually have physicians who, like you, who are especially interested in that and have clinics for pulmonary hypertension. Well, this is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about pulmonary hypertension and chronic thrombolic pulmonary hypertension with our very, very bright and well-trained guest, Dr. George. So if you have questions about this, if you've ever been diagnosed with pulmonary hypertension, or if you've been diagnosed with a blood clot in your leg that has gone to the lung, we'd love to hear your story. 866-391-1020 is how you can talk to our expert tonight on Medical Frontiers. 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we're back on Medical Frontiers for our next segment. We're talking about pulmonary hypertension this evening with Dr. George. She is a cardiologist and expert in the particular subject. 866-391-1020 is how you can talk to our expert tonight on Medical Frontiers. What are some of the things that people can do, Dr. George, to lower their risk as far as pulmonary hypertension is concerned? We know that in general we're better if we exercise and eat a proper diet and take our medications as our physicians prescribe and so on and that type of thing and try to maintain a good weight that is not too high or too low for us and so on. What are some of the specific things we can do?
So you basically answered that question.
sorry about that.
No, I mean, so as I mentioned, 80 to 90% of the time, pulmonary hypertension is truly due to other disease states. And so by preventing or minimizing your risk from those diseases would minimize your risk of developing pulmonary hypertension. Now, for pulmonary hypertension, pulmonary arterial hypertension, the 5%, the rare disease state. It's very hard to prevent that disease, and I'll tell you why, because a certain percentage of patients have what we call idiopathic pulmonary arterial hypertension.
Can that be genetic?
Sometimes it is hereditary. Sometimes it's hereditary and it's associated with certain pathways that affect the vascular bed. And that's where we see familial cases. And so that cannot be prevented. Other situations where you can develop pulmonary arterial hypertension, the rare disease state, can be caused, believe it or not, by certain weight loss drugs. You know, in the early 90s and in the 80s when patients were taking Fen-Phen, even now we ask patients, hey, were you ever on these drugs even 30 years ago?
Whoa.
Methamphetamines. Okay. Using them a certain amount of time can cause pulmonary hypertension. Certain chemotherapy drugs can cause pulmonary arterial hypertension. Certain over-the-counter herbs like toxic rapeseed oil. I know that sounds funny, but in France, they put toxic rapeseed oil in certain foods. That can cause pulmonary arterial hypertension. So when patients come in and we suspect pulmonary arterial hypertension, we ask probably 50 questions to make sure none of that's happening. And we go to the basics, like you mentioned. Do you have sleep apnea? Do you have do you have high blood pressure? Do you drink a lot of alcohol? Because cirrhosis can cause pulmonary hypertension. Have you ever had a congenital heart disease repair as a child? So we ask all of those questions because it gives us an idea of, hey, where's this disease coming from? Sometimes it doesn't change how we manage them. But it gives us an idea of, is this a pulmonary hypertension that could be treated with special medication? Or is this pulmonary hypertension that if I treat the left side of their heart or treat their lung disease, that can get better?
What about, does routine common hypertension sometimes cause pulmonary hypertension?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Separate issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were talking about sometimes it's necessary to do surgery for people who have pulmonary hypertension. Tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, so that goes back to what we were talking about with blood clots in the lung. So if you have chronic thromboembolic disease, so chronic blood clots caked into the vessels of the lung, that can be a surgically curable disease. The surgery is called a pulmonary thromboendarterectomy, where a cardiac surgeon, a surgeon who specializes in open heart surgery, and then in particular this surgery, goes in and, you know, of course they've identified areas of the lung that are diseased on imaging, like a CAT scan, and then they go into those areas of the lung and, for lack of a better explanation, basically scrape out those diseased areas and then sew the vessel back up and then sew the chest back up.
Mm-hmm.
Those patients, more often than not, walk out with a cured disease.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. It won't return.
Yeah. Right. As long as they stay on blood thinners the rest of their life.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And what percentage of people with pulmonary hypertension would be a good candidate for that procedure?
So that's a good question. It's only if patients have that category of pulmonary hypertension. I would say of our registries in America, we have it's something called a REVEAL registry. It's a registry to identify early and late pulmonary hypertension. Doesn't necessarily include patients with blood clots in their lungs. So I'm not sure that we have the exact percentage. So of all the patients with pulmonary hypertension, which percentage of them are due to blood clots in the lung? I'm not sure we have that exact number.
And I think you told me before the show that you've now crossed the threshold of 100
mm-hmm.
patients who have had successful surgery of that type.
We're actually, at Allegheny General, we're actually up to 101 patients who have had successful pulmonary thromboendarterectomy, so we're very happy about that.
And you've been doing those for how many years now?
I would say about, I want to say it's 12 or 13 years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And like you say, it's a procedure that can be done that will not return.
Right. And we, the procedure is done at less than 30 institutions in the country.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Well, what about as far as the general incidence of pulmonary hypertension? If you look at the entire population, what percent of people will develop pulmonary hypertension?
So when going back to that registry that looked at pulmonary hypertension in America, up to 12 to 13 people per million develop the rare disease form.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, that may be somewhat congenital, but they're sort of born with a propensity to do that, right?
Correct.
Okay. So that's fairly low.
It's fairly low.
How about garden common pulmonary hypertension?
I don't know that we have those numbers because imagine every patient out there with left heart disease. Imagine every patient out there with heart failure. Imagine every patient out there with emphysema.
Right.
Every single one of those diseases has certain percentages of.
Okay. Explain to our audience what is meant by emphysema.
Emphysema. Well, I'm not a pulmonologist. I'm not a lung doctor.
But you know about emphysema.
So if a patient smokes cigarettes, smokes tobacco for a certain defined time, they can develop emphysema in their lungs. It's changes in the lung tissue of your lungs that can affect your oxygen levels and affect how you breathe.
Yeah, and it affects the little area of the lung that is made up of alveoli. Mm-hmm. And that's where the work goes on in the lung. And my understanding is that those become enlarged, and so we have fewer alveoli whenever we have emphysema because they're enlarged, and so there's actually less surface area that can act to help oxygenate our blood. Okay, we need to take our break here at the bottom of the hour. We're talking with our very, very bright and informative guest, Dr. George, who is a cardiologist, and we're talking about pulmonary embolisms and pulmonary hypertension, that type of thing. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we're back for our next segment on Medical Frontiers. This is Dr. Pfeiffer with Dr. George, and this evening we're talking about pulmonary hypertension and chronic thromboembolic disease. And it's kind of interesting. We were talking in the first couple of segments that this was a condition that wasn't recognized by the medical community for a number of years, and now we're learning more and more about it and what can be done to help prevent it. And so if you have questions about this subject, give us a call, 866-391-1020, and we will have the expert answer your questions. That number again is 866-391-1020. What do you see out there in the next 15 years in your area of subspecialty? We certainly want to make early diagnosis and treatment and so on and make that available for our patients, but Tell me about what you see out there. What do you dream you would see out there in the next 10, 15 years?
I see a few things happening. First, I see that awareness just keeps rising, which is a good thing, because as you alluded to, then it allows for earlier diagnosis. We have come a long way with regards to medical therapy, what we call pH-specific medical therapy. So, for example, 30 years ago, we had one drug. We've since had the development of four different pathways of drug and about 15 different drugs in our repertoire.
Wow.
So we are really able to successfully treat these patients. We've also come a long way with regards to identifying genes associated with familial presentations. So there's that. We only hope for that to get better. We hope for further testing. So maybe we can streamline some of the current testing that we do for these patients. So I see like all those things happening. There was also a medication that was approved about 12 months ago now that has been revolutionary. We have been seeing significant improvement in patients' pulmonary pressures with this drug.
Yeah. What is the best test to diagnose pulmonary hypertension?
So what we call the gold standard diagnosis is what's called a right heart catheterization. Mm-hmm. So we go in to the right side of the heart from a vein. Classically, the vein in your neck. We go in through the internal jugular vein into the superior vena cava and into the right side chambers of the heart.
Whereas a routine catheterization of the heart goes through an artery.
Correct.
In the groin or in the wrist. And so this is going through a vein because that's where the problem is.
Right.
And so those are becoming more and more common, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
It's typically a lower risk procedure than going in through the artery.
Right.
And believe it or not, just a straightforward right heart cath is finished within well under 10 minutes.
Wow.
The patient's... The longest part of the patient's day is coming in through registration and then sitting in the cath lab and getting prepped.
Yeah. And then the procedure's done and then you want to wait a little while before they go home.
Right. 1 hour. That's it.
Okay. What about thinking of a question there? And do we have a call up there? Who is it? Jim? Hey, Jim, you're our first caller. You're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yeah, doctor. I was just listening to your program, and it kind of hit home here. Back in 2018, I had a hip replacement, and the day after I had the hip replacement, about 8 people showed up in my hospital room, and they said I had a DVT, and they said I had a PE, and they put me on warfarin for about 6 months. And the doctor checked me out 2 or 3 times. He said, I don't have the genetic marker for, blood clotting. So he said, that's good. And they had no answers to why I wound up with these blood clots, except he said, well, you weren't doing too much. You were sitting around waiting for hip replacement. And here recently, only a couple of weeks ago, my right foot swelled up quite a bit, and it's been painful ever since. And I had an ultrasound. They said I didn't have a blood clot. And I don't know. It's still, it's still swelled up. I just went to PT today, and they said, well, your right foot still swelled up. Don't know why, and nobody's given me an answer. I'm thinking, should I have that checked out further, or what should I do?
Well, go ahead, doctor.
Well, I would say it's good news that ultrasound of your leg looked good. And typically, that ultrasound should give you all the answers that you need. But I think it's worth calling your primary care provider one more time and having another discussion about that. See if you need more testing.
Yeah, it would seem that way. Because I just went, like I said, I was at PT today, and therapist there said, your right leg, right foot, and near the ankle is still swelled up for some reason. And I don't know why that is, I don't know what I should do. Because like I said, the ultrasound was done like a week and a half ago. It was Thursday, around the 15th or 16th at AVH. Mm-hmm. And they said they found no indication of a blood clot. And I was like, why is my the bottom of my right leg and ankle area still swelled up? So I should follow up with a PCP then, is what you're saying.
Do you have any pain or soreness in your foot or ankle on that side?
Yes, I do.
Okay, usually when you have what we call unilateral swelling due to a local problem, whenever you're retaining fluid in your body in general, usually your both legs are swollen. But when you have a local problem like that and your ultrasound is negative, I would say there might be something going on with your foot or ankle that is causing the swelling. And that, check with your PCP and get that checked out. You might need an x-ray, an examination to find out what's going on. Okay.
Okay, doctors, thank you very much for your help.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good luck to you. What about an echocardiogram? Can that detect right heart problems?
So an echocardiogram is the perfect screening tool for pulmonary hypertension and typically leads to either referral or straight to a right heart catheterization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that is it's a good test.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what the echocardiogram, you can get an ejection fraction. Mm-hmm. You can check your valves out, mm-hmm. and wall motion, the whole thing. It's mm-hmm. It's an amazing the test. And the one of the physicians who introduced cardiac ultrasound, Dr. Claude Joyner, mm-hmm. he came to Allegheny General from the University of Pennsylvania. And the ultrasound machine was almost half as big as this studio. And now they're just tiny little things and have a beautiful screen and so on, in color.
Mm-hmm. You can get cell phone sized echocardiogram.
Isn't that amazing? That's amazing.
Machines now.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take our last break. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about pulmonary hypertension this evening with Dr. George. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. You can call during the break and you'll be placed in the queue. 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we are back for our last segment of Medical Frontiers this evening, on this Monday evening, June the 2nd. And how you can get in touch with us to answer your questions is 866-391-1020. We're talking about pulmonary hypertension this evening and thromboembolic syndrome, where you get blood clots in your legs and they can go to your lungs and cause all kinds of problems. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. You know, we're talking about Dr. Claude Joyner, and it's kind of interesting that AGH has been around for a long time, and there's been a lot of firsts at AGH, the first bronchoscopes and laryngoscopes and so on were one of the places they were developed was by Dr. Chevalier Jackson, who was at Allegheny General for a number of years and then went to Philadelphia and ended up at Temple University Medical School, where I went to medical school. So, you know, a lot of firsts in Pittsburgh, you know, and of course, a polio vaccine was developed here. And one of the first heart transplants was done in Pittsburgh and that type of thing. A lot of firsts. So there's a lot of history. And that's so important because we had physicians that were willing to take that jump and try to do something that was going to help patients in the future, and it's kind of amazing to have gone through that, and we still see it today, where we have a lot of firsts. And mm-hmm. so you're working in a city and in a hospital system that has a great history, and we're glad you're part of it. And what we need to do is teach the next generation and the next generation so that they keep the same type of quality going and going and going. You agree?
I agree. I was reading something about Rust Belt cities, and it mentioned that the city of Pittsburgh survived the economic collapse after the steel mills shut down in the 70s because of the medical institutions and then the endowment funds for the arts. But I thought it was very interesting that the medical institutions and the history of medicine in the city really kept the economy alive at a time when other Rust Belt cities were suffering.
Yes, absolutely. And when you think that, and a shout out to the patients who are willing to participate in clinical studies and so on, you know, could you just say a word about that? Are you involved with some clinical studies?
I am, yes.
Okay.
So right now, at least in our division of advanced heart failure and pulmonary hypertension, we probably have close to 15 clinical trials that are all active. They're not all enrolling patients, but all active. A lot of them have to do with heart failure. And then we have probably, gosh, I forget the number, about six of them now, either running or up and coming for pulmonary hypertension. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of good things happening at Allegheny General.
How many people are involved in the cardiology section of of age and involved with pulmonary hypertension, so besides yourself?
Right. And so in our division, there are seven of us.
Seven.
Total, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how about some of the outlying institutions like St. Francis and Erie? Are there cardiologists there who are also treating pulmonary hypertension?
So in the Allegheny Health Network, all of the advanced heart failure and pulmonary hypertension specialists practice at Allegheny General.
I see.
Now, our other hospitals do have what we call heart failure clinics or infusion clinics, for example, run by nurse practitioners. So mm-hmm. Erie has a large heart failure clinic there. We collaborate with them quite frequently on complicated patients.
Mm-hmm. Are we training enough of you?
I think there's a huge need for heart failure specialists, especially out in the larger community centers. But it's interesting that you ask that, because in our heart failure training programs, the last several years, institutions have not had all of their trainee seats filled, for example. And we think that's a reflection of, you know, the job market and various other factors that we tend to see in certain specialties. There's like a waxing and waning of who wants to go into the fields and what the jobs are like.
It's one of the reasons, because it takes time, and it's not an easy subject to learn about and to treat, diagnose and treat. And so some people just don't want to work that hard, right?
That could be it. Or, you know, sometimes it gets exhausting, you know, just trying to always figure out puzzle pieces, you know, where do the puzzle pieces go? And that's not to say that other areas aren't working just as hard. It just seems like the cases may be a little more smooth sailing than, you know, a complicated heart failure or pulmonary hypertension patient.
It was interesting that in one of your answers to some of the questions we've been asking, you mentioned how chemotherapy drugs can have an effect on the heart. And we have a couple of cardiologists at AHN do nothing but cardiac oncology. Which is amazing, because radiation therapy, chemotherapy, mm-hmm. people with heart disease who develop cancer, and then they have to be treated and so on. So that's a whole subspecialty of its own.
Right. And we are at Allegheny General, a cardio-oncology center of excellence, which is amazing. Doctors Valentina Ivanova and Indu Purnima run the cardio-oncology clinic, yeah. Which is pretty busy.
Yeah, they have both been on Medical Frontiers. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. When we had Dr. Valentina on, and she said that her practice 100% is cardiac mm-hmm. oncology, which was really hard to believe, mm-hmm. but it's so necessary mm-hmm. because we have to remember that the whole body works, you know, hopefully together in health, but it also works together with disease, mm-hmm. and one disease may promulgate another disease, and it may be, you know, a sort of a tornado or cyclone can mm-hmm. hit when one thing hits and then another. And so it takes intelligence and people to pay attention. And it's not going to be replaced by artificial intelligence, because we still have to have that human factor to sort it out, you know.
Yes.
And certainly artificial intelligence can maybe give us a broad picture of what's going on, but it takes a human brain to figure it all out and figure out what's best for the patient.
I feel like artificial intelligence is useful if you know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I logged on to ChatGPT for the first time a couple of weeks ago and entered a generic question, like, for example, something that maybe a patient would be asking, and it actually didn't answer the question. So I felt reassured that we're not going to be out of jobs for a long time.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. George. It really is appreciating you being here as our guest tonight on Medical Frontiers. It's good seeing you again. Take good care of those three wonderful kids of yours, and let's get you back, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. We're going to say goodnight for Medical Frontiers. We'll be back next week with another guest and another subject. Good night.